Blog Talk Radio.
Penny Marshall, many of us will remember her as an actress, a director, and producer, provides the quote that we used to discuss during the show today. If you are not having a good time, find something else that gives you some joy in life. That sounds like a choice perspective to me. So I'm glad you're tuned into this Perspective Power Radio Network today, because we're going to explore choosing joy in our lives live here today on the first day of May 2016. That's right, it's the first day of May. Can you barely believe that? And we are live, as we always are, at 12 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here on the Perspective Power Radio Network. My name is Annette Rochelle Aben, and you're listening to the music of the award-winning artist David Martinka. His music is available at redbellymusic.com and sunshadows.net. He does have great free downloads, so please visit and visit often, as well as check out the CDs that he has available. I've got every one of them, and I listen to them constantly. So good stuff, David. Good stuff, Annette. Good stuff, everybody. Honestly, joy. If it ain't bringing you joy, why do you still do it? I mean, that's kind of the way I took the quote from Penny Marshall today. If you're not having a good time, go find something else that you are having a good time with. Now, you might think that that's just a cop-out. Yeah, okay, fine. And I'll give you a perfect example. Don't I always come up with these great examples, right? Well, because my life is a living example to you of how to do things differently. Just a thought there. Back in the day when I was a kid, right, at a bicycle. And I liked my bicycle. I liked to ride my bicycle. In fact, one year when I got my first real two-wheel bike, at Christmas time, actually, the weather was so nice on the Christmas break, I actually got to ride that bike all Christmas break because we had no snow on the ground. So it was kind of fun, right? And I did enjoy at the time, we'll keep it back in that time frame and progress forward, I did enjoy riding my bike. I rode my bike because I enjoyed getting to do things that walking wouldn't allow me to do, get places quicker, feel differently about mobility. You know, when you're walking, there's one set of muscles you're using and how you're getting to and from places is a little different than when you're riding that bicycle. Okay. Anyway, as life and I progressed, I found that I enjoyed doing other things with my bike, riding to see friends, or putting my transistor radio in the basket that I had on the handlebars and going to the park and sitting and listening to my music. So again, still, I've always enjoyed bicycling. Now, in 1980, I got married to a man who loved bicycles. And when I say loved them, I mean loved them. He had a motorcycle bike and he had a pedal bike. He had several pedal bikes, actually. And even though he did own a brand new car, it was the second car he had ever owned, he preferred, as long as the weather held out, which out of 365 days a year for him was kind of like 350 days, he literally rode his bike to and from work every single day. And it was no just around the corner trek. It was a few miles away and through a part of town, we both came from Detroit, through a part of town that was less than savory. So here he is, you know, a man working the midnight shift, riding his bike through a neighborhood where when the skies turn dark, some interesting people came out to greet you and wish you well along your way, and sometimes not so much. But anyway, he loved riding his bike that much. So one of the things that happened early in our relationship was he decided that he and I, had to spend our vacations, of which he got 5 weeks a year and I got like one or two. We had to spend them on bicycle trips. And what I mean by that is we lived in the great state of Michigan, and the northern Michigan area is just absolutely breathtaking. If you've never visited, please check it out. Not just the Upper Peninsula, but northern Michigan, up above Flint, Saginaw, that area, up into Newberry and places north. Newberry's in the UP, Annette, never mind. Never mind, I said that. Traverse City, Petoskey, those are all lower, upper Michigan areas. All right, so Michigan Bicycle Touring was a company that existed back then. And for a set fee, they would take you on a two-day, three-day, or week-long bicycle tour of a specifically mapped out area. You would drive to the area with your bikes on the back of your vehicle, or they actually would rent bikes to you. And you would drop your car at the lodge or the hotel place, wherever it was you were staying. And then you would bike to the next location and then the next location. And then depending on how long your trip was, you would then turn around and come back and bike back to your vehicle. Or by the end of that trip, you were doing that. So on the five-day trips, you were literally biking 4 or 5 solid days. The routes were mapped out so you could ride as few as 25 miles in one day and as many as 100 miles in one day. And I am not joking when I say that. Now, you heard how I enjoyed my bike, right? So for me to get out there and pedal for anywhere from 25 to 100 miles was kind of like, are you kidding me or what? Now, the 25-mile route was usually broken up into 2 or 3, you know, stages. Like you could ride so far and then you could stop and then so far and then you could stop, because even those larger routes were broken up and the sag wagon or the van, the company van, would pick you up. Now, there weren't cell phones back then. There weren't any ways of communicating with somebody. So they just kind of have to find you at the side of the road. You know, they knew where the stopping points were. And they would be the last people to leave because they'd go to your room and collect all your luggage, or you'd bring it down and they'd, you know, take care of paying the bill and give everybody a head start, and then they'd sort of follow along. And generally, my husband and I were the last two people, just because we were, because he loved to sort of lollygag and check the scenery out and really enjoy the experience. I, on the other hand, wanted to get to the next location as quickly as possible, get off that bike, and do something different. There were a couple of reasons for that. First of all, not because it hurt me physically to ride the bike. That wasn't, please don't get that impression. But I would have issues of balance and vertigo. So when I was on that bike, it was kind of like with every movement of my legs, it felt like I was going to tip one side to the other. So I'm not enjoying this, right? But I'm giving it a shot because this is my husband. He's going to want to do this for the rest of his life. So you might as well, you know, let's check it out. And the scenery was breathtaking. The company was amazing. And the food was really great. So why not? You know, let's go have a bike time. Well, it got to the point where after several years of spending anywhere from 2 weekends a year to 2 weeks a year on these bike trips, I realized I was not getting any joy. I was not having a good time with all of this. And I said something to him about it. I said, you know, Dan, this is not working for me. And it didn't set well with him. There was not a lot of happiness in that regard. So I have to tell you that not only did the bicycle touring not become a part of my life beyond that, but the marriage also after several years did not. And I really believe that we gave both energies a good go, right? We really did try. So this part of the quote where it says, if you're not having a good time, find something else that in your life that can bring you some joy, try it. I mean, it really wasn't just like the first time I went out, I suddenly went, oh, wow, this really is not for me, and end of it. I tried longer trips. I tried shorter trips. We tried some that had less steep terrain. But there was just something about it that even though I tried to look at it and weigh the good, how much I really enjoyed it versus maybe the 2 or 3 things I wasn't enjoying, it just turned out not to be for me. So I went and found other things that brought me joy. My husband went and did the things that found him joy. And in so much as it was not meant to be for the bike trips or the marriage, the idea is if, in fact, you are looking at your life and you're saying to yourself, I'm not having a good time, it is the choice of your perspective as to what you are experiencing. Some people cannot have a good time at a birthday party. Some people cannot have a good time where they work. Some people cannot have a good time on a vacation, and some people cannot have a good time in a relationship. But it's the perspective of allowing yourself the idea, the concept of choice, that really spins that around, because you're not stuck. I don't care where you are, what you're experiencing, what you're going through, what you're living. You are not stuck. And I can see the hands raised right now going, yeah, I'm kind of stuck. I've got this obligation, this commitment. I made this promise. I took this vow. I'm kind of stuck. No, you're really not. Because you can choose to see that situation in which you are feeling stuck as something that gives you a different and unique gift, blessing, whichever word you'd like to use. Some people think the word blessing is a little too out there, so maybe gift might be a better way. So even if you cannot change the situation, the part of the quote that says, find something else that gives you some joy in life, perhaps you can find some aspect of that experience from which you can extract joy. So let's take it back to the bicycle touring. What did I find that I could extract joy from? Well, there were a couple of things. First of all, love to take pictures. So I found joy in being able to photograph some pretty nifty scenery. I also found joy in the fact that that sag wagon was ready for me whenever I was. So I made every single day trip to the first lunch stop, to the lunch stop. And no matter what route we took, whether we took the short route to get to the lunch stop, the medium route, or the long route, and we usually took the long route, I rode them all, got to the lunch stop and enjoyed our wonderful vegetarian lunches. We had some great, fantastic meals with these people. And the people that ran the bicycle, Michigan Bicycle Touring, actually provided the meals. When they served sandwiches, they had made the bread at their home in Kingsley, Michigan, and brought it with them on the trip. We ate great food, had wonderful laughter, enjoyed ourselves. And then at the end of that meal, I had them put my bike into the van or on top of the van or however they were hauling it. I went into the van, and I rode with them to the hotel. My husband got to hang out with all the other people because this was never just a two- or three-person trip. There were a gang of us that would go on these trips, and we got to become friends with everybody, sometimes even corresponding years after the event. I would go to the hotel or the lodge or wherever it was we were staying. I would unload our luggage, help them unload everybody else's, put my bike in the room, take a nice hot bath or a shower, whichever was available to me, and then I would kick back, and I would do what I like to do, which was write letters to people. I'd fill out postcards. I'd journal. I'd rest. I'd watch a little TV. I mean, it was my vacation, too. So I found joy in these other aspects of the event, even though they were not the same things my husband would find joy in on that trip, and even though it really wasn't what the trip was all about. The trip was about the bicycling and the scenery and the camaraderie. However, because I could not extricate myself from that situation, I decided I will find joy in this situation in some way, shape, or form. So then by the time my husband arrived at the place we were staying, his bath was ready. I'd make sure that there was coffee or beer or wine or something that he had said he would want waiting for him when he got there. His clothes for dinner were laid out. And don't make it sound fancy, trust me. It was just changing out of your hot, sweaty stuff from riding into something, in another pair of jeans and a T-shirt. But his clothes were laid out, and I was happy. Then I could go to dinner with him and all the rest of our comrades, and I felt great. I'd have my little glass of wine or whatever it was we had with our meal. We'd have a fabulous meal because that was all part of the experience. These people knew exactly how to treat us and treat us very well, and believe me, the price was right. If they were still in business, I'd give you their website, but they're not because it was quite the experience in that regard. So as a result, I wasn't having a good time trying to like all the other things, but I was able to find some joy in the situation. That meant that my perspective was one of choice. I can sit and grouse about it, and believe me, being hundreds, and at one point we were in the furthest northern part of Michigan that you could possibly be, up in the Keweenaw Peninsula. It took us 13 hours to drive home. And it wasn't exactly like I could just hop in the car and say, well, I'll see you later, bye, and head back home. So, and we were there for a week, by the way. So it was one of these deals where I'm going to make the best of this situation, and I'm going to really enjoy myself. Now, the funny thing is that I was the odd duck in the group. Everybody else was more like my husband. They went through all the the 100-mile riding and whatever else, and they had their tales to tell. But the interesting thing was, to me, that I could look at this from the perspective of how they were enjoying it while still enjoying it for me, had I not been able to choose to take my perspective and look at it differently and find that joy, I would have had nothing good to say. And I'm sure that my energy would have contributed to the unenjoyment of everybody else in that group as much as rain showers or the time we were riding through Sault Ste. Marie along Lake Superior, and it was cold enough to start snowing. Yes, that's right. We were on vacation, and it was September, which should have still been warm enough. In the lower part of Michigan, it would have. In the upper part of Michigan, not so much. So we actually had to stop at a little gas station slash convenience store slash bathroom place because, believe me, up there everything gets huddled into one little building. And we had to buy hats and gloves and scarves because we were just freezing, absolute freezing. But that's beside the point. But just an example of if you're in the middle of something, doing something, living an experience, and it's not bringing you happiness, you got to create your own joy. It's your choice to utilize your perspective of choice, how you see the situation, how you choose to see the situation. Can you choose to find some good in it? Can you choose to be happy regardless? Can you fill in the blank with all of this? And the idea isn't so much can you, it's will you. Will you take the time to give yourself a better experience? Will you take the time to use it to make you better instead of bitter? Now let's bring this into an entirely different realm, maybe something more of us can relate to than bicycling and divorce and whatever else. Anybody here ever been a child? Raise your hand. Okay, I see all these hands raising at me. I was at one time. Not so much now. I act like one. In fact, the older I get, the more like a child I act, and I'm kind of okay with that. But the point I'm trying to bring up is the teenage years. Holy mackerel, they can be brutal. They can be brutal not only for the teenager, but for the parent, and then everybody else around you. So I have a very dear friend who's got a 17-year-old son who, in about a year, will be 18. He will be going into his final year in high school, coming up as the school year will start in the fall. And right now it is not a happy experience in his life for him because he's struggling with, I want to be the person I want to be, but my family, my parents specifically, want me to be the person they say I should be. And everybody's got a different way of getting their message across, right? Some parents smother you with love to show you what they think would be the best direction for you. Some parents challenge you with words that don't necessarily seem to resonate. And some parents just ignore you and say, hey, you're on your own, figure it out. And any manner of combination here, there, and everywhere, right? So the issue is I am friends with both the child and the parent. And I have been for the exact same amount of time this child has been alive. I've actually held this child when he was a week old, and that's at the same time I met the parents, the grandparents, the whole nine yards. And I see both their points. I get it. I get the frustration that the mom feels. I get the frustration that the child feels, the son feels. And I get the frustration that I feel because part of me wants to take the mom aside and say, hey, look, do you hear yourself when you speak to your child? And if you do, are these words you would like to hear? If not, think about that. In other words, neither one of them are finding any good time in this relationship building and relationship divergence because he is going to move away from home at some point. He is going to leave. So whether or not this is something that the mom and the dad and are really looking forward to, like, yes, the child is growing up, and yes, the child is going to move out, and yes, it's going to be better because they're going to be on their own, they're going to see what life is really like, you know, all those things that your parents tell you. But the point is, because at this particular moment, neither one of them are having a good time, and yet it's not possible for them to split this situation up. It's not possible for that young man to move out of the house. It's not possible for his parents to put him out of the house. That's just not going to work. So they have to find something else in their life to get their joy from. And perhaps, and maybe, by focusing their energy on something else that they can get joy from, instead of looking at each other and saying, well, if you would change and behave the way I want you to, I'd be happy. Because I'm going to tell you right now, that never works. You can write that down, sign it, date it, put it in the vault, sign my name to it. Because I promise you, as sure as we're both sitting here, all sitting here listening to this, both, I say both like it's just me and you, but it's me and a bunch of yous. That will never work. It will never work to look at somebody else and say, look, I love you, you're great, but you got to change because I'm not happy around you. And my life is not happy because of the things you choose to do. So he's wishing that of her, and she's wishing that of him. And I'm sitting here going, well, you know, I kind of see both your points, but I can see it from a different vantage point, kind of like a triangle. He's at one end, she's at the other end. There's this long bridge of miscommunication between the two of them, and the points come all the way up, and they meet at the top where I am. So I can look down, and I can see the whole picture. I have a different perspective, right? There's that word again. So what I choose to do is remind them both that I support them totally, each of them, and remind them both that the finding of the joy, especially in a situation where you're not having a good time, is each of their own responsibility. I'm not real popular because of that, right? It's not what either one of them wants to hear. Each of them wants to be supported and feel vindicated that they're right. Yeah. And now I'm going to tell you something. And this is going to sound kind of harsh, but that's a bully mentality. It's a bully mentality when people have to go and gather a bunch of other people to stand with them and face a situation, usually the behavior of another person, that they want to have changed, and they all stand there with their arms and say, look, it's not only me that thinks you're out of your mind or off your rocker. All these other people do too, so what are you going to do about it? That is bullying. Not just beating somebody up, not just standing there calling somebody names, but the idea that somebody else has to change to please you and that you then also go and get your posse together and they stand there and demand it as well. Even though we come by it naturally in most cases because it's the way we were raised. And I'm not necessarily talking about our parents, although that can be. But it has been throughout history, even if you look at countries and the way they've existed, if you want to keep everybody in line, you find a way to hit them in their Achilles heel. So if somebody's trying to find their self-esteem and you're angry with them at that moment, where's the best place to catch them? Boom, right in the self-esteem. Right? So where's the easiest place to bring a child to their knees if you're a parent? Tell them you don't like them. Tell them you hate them. Tell them you can't stand them. Tell them you can't wait until they leave. Tell them they're just like their father, their mother, their older sibling, their younger sibling, the creepy person down the street that nobody likes, the creepy person uptown that nobody likes. In other words, attack them because that is something they cannot defend. That's your opinion. That's your perspective. So now you're not finding any joy in your relationship with that child, and that child doesn't know what to do. They're not like that other person, although they may be displaying tendencies that appear to be that way. And if they are already, like most teenagers, walking around with a compromised self-esteem level, well, then their perspective is one of, well, I'm crap, and I don't know how to get them to see I'm not crap. So if what they're learning is yelling and attacking, they're going to turn around and yell and attack too. And you can say, well, gee, Annette, that sounds like they're just choosing that because it's the easiest way out. Well, it is for everybody. So the idea here is if you're living in a situation such as parent and child and you've got no other way of dealing with it except to shift your perspective, to choose to find some joy in life. It doesn't even have to be joy in the relationship, and this is what I'm getting at. Find joy in something. Do you like to paint? Find joy in painting. Do you like to write songs? Find joy in writing songs. Maybe you like to play a sport, and I'm talking parent or child, it doesn't matter, soccer, baseball, basketball, golf, who cares, swimming. Find joy in something, and I'll tell you why. Because the more joy you can cultivate in any other aspect of your life, the more it's going to fill you. Then when you are in that situation where you are confronted by the partner, the spouse, the teenager, the neighbor, the coworker, whomever, you might not enjoy that interaction with them at that moment. And they might have said something that triggers something inside of you. But you have the choice to flip that trigger in another direction. You have the choice to react this way or that way. You have the choice to say, you know what? There isn't a whole lot I can do about this situation right now. And yes, I know if that person persists in this behavior, they are going to create a life for themselves that might not be the happiest. But that's not mine to choose. That's theirs. Now, let's take it a step further. Not only are you choosing to fill yourself with joy by finding something in your life that you get joy out of, but you're setting the example for the other person. Because I believe when somebody attacks you verbally or physically, that's a cry for help. I don't care who you are. I don't care whether it's an adult attacking a child, meaning a parent and a child, or vice versa, or peer pressure. That's a cry for help. That is a huge cry for help. By you being able to say, you know what, I'm going to turn that over to a higher power, guardian angels, God, whomever. It doesn't really matter. I just say, you know what, not my circus, not my monkeys. You go find your joy. You are showing that person how to help themselves in their own life. You're showing that person how it's done. And they might not get it right away. In fact, it might make them even angrier temporarily because they're sitting there thinking, well, you're not responding to me. You're definitely not dealing with me. You're definitely not honoring me. Well, yeah, of course you are. Of course you are honoring them. You're honoring them because what you're doing is you're saying, I don't accept the behavior and I don't tolerate it, but I have the compassion. I choose the perspective of compassion to realize this is where you need to be right now. And I'm going to go over here and I'm going to find some joy in my life. And I'm going to get into my joy. I'm going to get my joy groove on. And then what I'm going to be able to do is not add fuel to that fire. I'm not going to take the embers and fan them with the flames of my own fear, and this conflagration is going to result. It works. Might not work the first time you do it. It might not work the second time you do it. If you're looking for a quick and easy fix, there is no such thing. There is no such thing. Every moment of every day, you have the choice to own the perspective that brings you joy. You can't expect somebody else to do it for you, like in the case that I spoke about at the beginning between my husband and I and our vacations that were crazy and wacky at the time, but we got over it. The example that I used with the teenage son and his mother, you may not see it work, quote unquote, in your situation, but you'll feel it work inside of you. And the more you do it, the more you get into that practice of choosing the perspective of joy, making this a choice perspective for you to find something else that brings joy to your life. Once you keep that sustained energy, it gets easier and easier and easier. And yes, the contrast will show up, but that's okay. Contrast shows up, it shows you're doing something right. But it doesn't mean you should stop what you're doing just because the contrast shows up. We'll talk about that in another show, I think, maybe. Penny Marshall said, if you're not having a good time, find something else that gives you some joy in life. I cannot thank her enough for that great quote upon which we based this particular program today. I can't thank award-winning artist David Martinka, who provides our music enough, for donating his wonderful services. Remember to find him at redbellymusic.com and sunshadows.net. And, of course, I cannot thank you enough for being a part of the show today. I truly appreciate your energy and your support. And I appreciate the fact that you choose to share this time with me on the Perspective Power Radio Network.